Welcome into the Air Race Sports Podcast. I am Chandler Carney. With me, as always, Brady Scott.
What up?
We're going to recap everything that happened over the weekend in sports, and Brady's going to kick us off with the World Series champs.
Take Boston it away. Boston Red Sox. Boston Red Sox. Five games. I mean, all I can say is the best team won the World Series this year. They were the best team through spring training. Only lost two games. Won 108 regular season games, and then just mowed through the playoffs, taking down three of the best teams in baseball, in the Yankees, the Astros, and the Dodgers. I mean, going into the season, you would have probably said, I mean, you gave a top five of who you thought was going to be the best teams in the MLB, and I truly believe all three of those teams that the Red Sox beat would have been in there.
Well, the Red Sox probably wouldn't have been, would they?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're 4 or 5. You think they were the best team coming in the season?
I mean, I think the Astros were the best team coming in, coming off a World Series win. Obviously, you got the Dodgers with their staff and their lineup, with the addition of Manny Machado midseason. I mean, everybody thought they were poised to go back to the World Series and win it. I mean, they were on their revenge tour this year. Didn't quite get there. Didn't give their best effort in the World Series, I don't think. I mean, they just dug themselves in too deep of a hole in Boston going down 0-2 and coming back and winning a marathon game, 18 innings. Longest.
How long did you make it?
I made it 12.
I made it 17 and I went to bed.
That's tough.
I was so pissed when I woke up. I was like, well, I guess I could have. I was just happy I finally called a baseball game, right? Because I said, you know, Dodgers are going to take game three and then Boston's going to finish it out in the next two.
I mean, you called it. I mean, you were spot on with your prediction. I mean, after they won game three, they come out hot in game four, have a 4-1 lead or a 4-run lead late in that ball game. Yeah. Red Sox hadn't scored a run going in the seventh. And then that offense just exploded.
Do you agree with pulling the pitcher?
Which one?
The starting pitcher. I don't remember who started the game four. But
for the Dodgers?
For the Dodgers. Pulled him.
Bueller?
Yeah.
No, Bueller threw game three.
I don't know who threw it. I just
Oh yeah. I mean
they pulled him and he wasn't losing anything off his balls, gave up one run, and then you have to go into the bullpen.
Rich Hill. Yeah. I mean, they're playing the matchup there. Roddy Lefty's coming up there playing matchup right there, and he just thought he had a better matchup coming out of the pen because Rich Hill had gone deep into that ball game. I mean, it's 7th inning.
He could have went the whole game and then probably didn't have to use any of their bullpen.
I don't think he could have went the whole game. I mean, going through the third time in the lineup, they've seen you twice. And so third time seeing you, they're more comfortable. They really know your tendency now. They know what you're going to do to certain guys, what pitches you like throwing, what situations. But, I mean, you can't fault Dave Roberts. I mean, second straight year taking his team to the World Series. I mean,
you can fault him.
I mean, you can't really question what he does. You can, I mean, he's proven he's put his team in positions to win, and his team trusts him. So, I mean, he made the move that he thought was going to win in the ball game, and it just didn't work out. And that's how it works sometimes. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. But, I mean, I think the key to the series was David Price.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, what do you think about him in this series? I mean, should he have won MVP?
Nah, I think he could have. He was the second choice. But after Steve Pierce got rolling in the last two ball games, hit three home runs, three key home runs in that game, in those two games, off of basically the Dodgers' two best pitchers, Kenley Jansen and Kershaw, I mean, you had to give it to him. I mean,
he's come a long way. Has he proven the doubters wrong? Just by this one World Series performance, you know, well, he has the postseason issues, but then he comes in.
I mean, I think he built off the performance in the last game of the ALCS against the Astros.
Yeah, because, I mean, he wasn't performing up to par, and then comes in that game. And
he just came into that game and just, it was like a totally different person. He looked like second half David Price from this year. He figured his stuff out, started pitching backwards a little bit, and he just showed up in a big way, and the Red Sox really needed him. I mean, he goes 8 innings, or into the 8th inning, 7 complete into the 8th. after warming up the night before in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Pitching the day before that.
In relief.
In relief.
And starting the game
before that. Starting game two.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of pitches. If you'd have told me David Price was going to throw seven innings of one-run baseball, and that run coming off the first pitch of the ball game, home run, Chris Taylor, I'd have looked at you like you were stupid. I'd have said there's no way that his arm has enough left in it to throw seven innings. I mean, with his track record in the postseason, you thought that was going to come back and get him.
Yeah.
It didn't, and he threw one of the best games of his life. When his team needed it most.
I think Joe Kelly pitched really well in this series as well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he pitched every game.
I mean,
in relief.
He at least pitched four.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a key part of that bullpen. Yeah. I mean, coming in there, we've talked about before, there's question marks with the bullpen. Was the bullpen going to be able to hold up? And quite frankly, it did. He came in and just... he shut everything down every time he came into the ballgame. He put if there was a fire when he came in, he put it out. And then when he came in clean, he just had to shut down any. Got the bats back in the lineup. And I think what's lost in this is the innings that Nathan Eovaldi gave the Red Sox. A starter who didn't get a start the entire series. Didn't start. I mean, and he worked out of the pen in two or three games. And he gives you four big innings in that 18-inning marathon. I mean, it's just stuff like that that sort of gets lost in it. But, I mean, you had starters coming out of the pen for the Red Sox. Basically saying, I'm going to give up my arm, give up my start to help the team win.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you have to have if you're going to have a World Series winning team. And the Red Sox had that.
I mean, you think about it, you still get paid. Do you not? Yeah. And then you get a ring as well.
But some guys just can't get off of that rotation, of just that routine of going through your routine and starting.
Yeah.
Some guys just can't translate that to getting hot in the bullpen and coming in the middle of the game.
What about Chris Sale and his belly button rash coming in to close things out? Do you think that was a good way to go for him?
I mean, even if something crazy happens and Dodgers come back and win that game, he's still starting game six in Boston. I mean, you can tell the fastball life, he's still 95, 96, but, I mean, it wasn't where it usually is. The slider still had the depth on it, though. So when he came in, I said, it's over. I mean, it was all but over before that, but when he came in the ball game, it was over, which was key because I don't think Craig Kimbrell had any innings in it in game five. After as much as he threw over the first four games of the series, I think he would have came in, but he wouldn't have been that sharp, I don't believe.
Yeah, I was actually watching that game with my mom. My mom, I don't think she's ever watched a baseball game in her life.
Yeah.
And Kimbrell was pitching. And, you know, he holds his arm up like this. And she said, why is he holding his arm up like that? And I was like, I guess that's just comfortable for him, you know?
It's just something he's always done.
Yeah.
Back when he came up with the Braves.
Yeah.
He's always done it. I don't know why. I don't see how that's comfortable for anybody.
Nah.
But... it's his routine, and apparently it works pretty good for him.
It's kind of like free throws, you know. You should have the same routine every time you shoot a free throw.
I mean, it's the same thing with pitchers.
Yeah.
They're creatures of habit. They're weird people.
It's the same thing when you're in the box, too. You know, you kind of do the same thing
after every pitch. Everybody has their routine. Yeah. I mean, baseball is just – it's as big a mental game as it is anything else. Because, I mean, you look at it, the best players that ever play the game fail 7 times out of 10. You fail 7 times out of 10 at the plate, and you're a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's just – there's really no other sports you can do that in. And it's just overcoming that mentality of failing. Who can overcome failing, and those are the best players in the league.
Well, that's going to be all for baseball until April, March.
March is when they – I mean, they report late – April, early May. Late February, early March.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't have much time off.
No.
And they'll be back in spring training, playing preseason, and then everything kicks back off in April.
It's kind of like hockey. I feel like hockey's a year-round sport almost. Yeah. It's just kind of like baseball.
I mean, basketball's long, too. I mean, they go all from October all the way to June.
Well, if you think about it as well, they have summer league ball. Yeah. And then if you're in the Olympics, you have that. If you're in the FIBA World Cups, you have that.
I mean, the thing with the NBA now, though, with the Warriors' dominance late in the past few years, free agency during the summer is about as entertaining to watch as the season,
yeah,
in my opinion. I mean, I just sit there and see who's going where. I believe that's just as fun as watching the regular season of the NBA. I mean, it doesn't compete with the playoffs, but, I mean, it's quality. I mean, you have all that through the summer, and really the only times people aren't talking about basketball is August. Because, I mean, in September, they're talking about preseason basketball again.
I think there's certain people that do. I mean, when it's football season, I feel like it's football season for me personally. I can remember about 2 years ago, you came up from Ellisville to make me watch a World Series game with the Cubs.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there trying to tell me, you know, well, this is history. You're watching history. And I'm kind of like, you know, I don't give a rat's ass about history. I want to watch football. It's football season. And it's just because you don't get it year-round.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe with the AAL coming up and the XFL coming up in 2 years, I'm excited to see how that year-round sports will be competitively between all of them.
I just don't know if it'll be the talent that everybody just comes in and watch other than diehards.
Yeah.
You know? Diehards will be the only people who start out watching that. But.
Well, I guess you can say I'm a diehard because I'll start out watching it.
Yeah.
I would take one of those games over, depending on who plays, a basketball game, and probably 9 times out of 10 a baseball game.
Yeah. October, though.
October baseball is the best baseball.
No, hands down.
There's no question about it.
There's nothing like
April's the best. April to June is the best basketball. I really think April is just because you have so many teams, so many series going on.
Just like in college football, November.
Yeah.
October, November.
I mean, it's not crazy to say in college football they remember November. Because if you lose a game in August or in September,
you come back. Just like with this year, or years past when Ohio State won the Natty, they lost a game earlier that season. Everybody forgot about it, and they came. If they lost that same game in November, I don't think they get in the college football playoff.
That's any year, too.
Just like this year, you have Michigan, LSU, Oklahoma. All those teams won early losses. All those teams won out. We're talking about all those teams potentially being in the playoff.
Yeah.
Or having a great shot to get in.
All right, so here's a big question for today. Do you have any news for the day?
I believe the news. The news that came out yesterday that was all over TV was Hugh Jackson getting fired, which was shortly followed by Todd Haley being fired.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows the bad blood between those two have been brewing the past couple weeks. Hugh Jackson's been taking shots at Todd Haley. I think Hugh Jackson just wants to call the plays, or wanted to call the plays.
I think Hugh Jackson's just an idiot.
I mean, this is long overdue.
And he can't accept his own responsibility.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And think about Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland is a city that has lost 4 coaches in the last 2-3 months.
I mean, this week.
Tyronn Lue gets fired from the Cavs.
That's 3 coaches in the span of 2 days.
And then you lose Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley, and LeBron James left them this past summer.
That's tough.
That's 4 coaches right there.
That's tough.
City of Cleveland's on fire, man. The Indians are going to have to save them.
That's our only hope right now.
Yes.
The Cavs are terrible again.
And then the Browns.
But, I mean, Cavs, they knew the Cavs were going to be terrible, though, when LeBron left. They've been through it before. They knew it was going to happen. They're going to be awful and get the number one pick.
I don't understand the Tyronn Lue firing. I really don't.
I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be able to come in there and immediately win with the roster they have.
I think they hired Tyronn Lue because LeBron said hire him because I can tell him what to do.
Yeah.
And he couldn't do that with David Blatt.
No.
Because David Blatt wasn't going to allow it. And so they fired David Blatt. Tyronn Lue steps in. Mm-hmm. LeBron's like, hey, this is what we're doing.
And they won a championship.
It's kind of like when he went to Miami, then young, no-name Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra comes in. But he started out in the AV room.
He's turned into a good coach.
Yeah, he has. I mean, I'm not knocking anything from him. I'm just saying.
It usually doesn't happen like that.
Yeah. But he worked his way up to get that head coaching position, whether it's because of LeBron or not.
Because you had LeBron and D-Wade both in there saying, listen, sort of like early 2000s Miami when they had Coker as their head coach.
Yeah.
Sort of like just go over here and do whatever. We're going to do our thing and we're going to win. Just don't get in our way.
Yeah.
Basically is what it was.
With this firing for the Cleveland Browns, in a sense, you got to think if you're in the NFL and your mascot starts with a B, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
The Browns, the Bills, the Broncos.
The Bengals.
I mean, you think about it. They're all – it's a shit show for all of them.
All of them this year. I mean, Peyton Manning for the Broncos was basically their bright spot.
Yeah. And then
– without him, they don't win that Super Bowl. They might. Their defense won them that Super Bowl, but I mean
– I mean, I get what you're saying. He didn't do much, but – he definitely managed the game.
Just Peyton Manning being back there and the knowledge he has translates to all the other guys on the offensive side of football. Yeah. I mean, just the mentality and mindset he has going into preparation. I believe that translated to the team more than his play did, his preparation.
And then you think about the Bengals. Marvin Lewis is a long overdue for a firing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like the Bengals keep saying, well, we're okay with being mediocre. We're okay with you only winning these few ball games. We're going to keep you on. But you can't win a playoff game.
I mean, he's not going to.
I mean, at some point you have to – and I always use this argument. You have to think like LSU with Les Miles. Les Miles was a great football coach.
Yeah.
He's going to win you 10, 11 ball games a year.
He's not going to beat Alabama.
He's not going to beat Alabama. And if he does, he's not going to win you a national championship.
No.
And he couldn't get over that hump, and they finally decided it was time to move on.
How many chances do you think Coach O gets to beat Alabama and Nick Saban?
Two.
Two more?
No, I think he gets this year. And yeah, this year and next year. This year and next year. And I really don't think. I think once Dave Aranda leaves, which I would – suspected be after this season. Be
this season or next season.
And then Essinger, I think is how you pronounce his name. I'm not certainly positive on that. The offensive coordinator, I think he'll get a different gig.
I mean, I think they may try and give Aranda a little more money this year. And as soon as Coach O starts scuffling, they're going to part ways and make him a full-time guy. I mean, I think that would be the move if I was their AD.
Give him more money and let him be your backup plan?
I mean, yeah. Because, I mean, in all honesty, Coach O probably not going to beat Bama. And the longer you have him there, you're going to lose Aranda. I mean, it's sort of like it didn't work out very well, but sort of like Will Muschamp at Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, Mack Brown just kept stringing along, and finally he got tired of waiting, and he left. I mean, he wasn't the coach everybody thought he was going to be. But it's sort of that same situation. Sometimes guys just get tired of waiting around. They want to be the guy. They want to have their own program.
Because he was a coaching waiting, that tag, for like 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, everybody thought Mack Brown was on his way out. And then after he left, what, he coached 1 year? Two?
I think he stayed at Florida for another year. And then...
No, Mack Brown.
Mack Brown? After he left, he coached two more years. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
So that would have been 5 years of waiting. Nobody's going to wait around that long.
Not when you have SEC offers like he did.
No. I mean, it's just a natural human instinct move. I'm going to go out here. I want to see if I can do this on my own.
Yeah.
I mean, and nobody's going to blame him. I think it's the same thing with Aranda. He's going to get tired of waiting around if you prolong it too much.
Well, what about the Bills and their dumpster fire at quarterback?
I have. It's just terrible. That's all you can say about it. There's nothing good you can say about it. So the nicest way I can put it is it's terrible. It's a bad situation no matter who's there. I don't care. Josh Allen's not ready. I don't know if he'll ever be ready. But even if he is ready, they don't have the talent around them to do anything.
So you trade away Tyrod Taylor, who took you to the playoffs. He was not a terrible quarterback by any means.
I don't understand that.
You sign A.J. McCarron to a decent amount of money. you're going to be like, okay, we're going to let you have your chance.
And then you ship him out.
Then you trade up in the draft, and you take Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And all along, you have Nathan Peterman sitting there, who's terrible.
How does he have a job?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'd like to hear the story on that.
But then, okay, well, we're going to trade AJ McCarron to the Raiders during preseason. He got hurt. I get it. But at the same time, you're going to say, we're going to stick with Peterman and Josh Allen. Well, they prove to you they're not the answer. And then you call up Derek Anderson, who is probably 35 years old by now. He's up there in age. He's on a golf course and say, hey, you want to be our quarterback? Yeah, well, sure. And then he gets three practices and he has to play in a game.
That's just stupid. It makes no sense what they're trying to do there.
Ain't win. They're not trying to win.
I don't know what they're trying to do.
I mean, they have a decent secondary, but, I mean, that's about the only bright spot they have.
And it's not many. I mean, just watching them play, how did that team beat the Vikings in Minnesota?
I don't know.
Like, that baffles me. How did they beat the Vikings in Minnesota?
So, let's talk rumor mill. Who's your guy that you think is going to go and take over the Cleveland Browns? Or who do you think the Cleveland Browns are going to try to get?
I mean, they're obviously going to reach out to Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
I mean, his name's out there every year for new jobs. I think they're going to reach out to him first, and then I really don't know where they go from there.
So, Haslam came out today, the owner of the Browns, and he said, you know, I want a young guy who's got NFL experience. And when he says that, you know, the first person that comes to my mind? Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
And you think about what he could do with Baker Mayfield and the progression that he could make with him. I think that would be,
incorporate his style in the NFL, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, obviously, speculation right now when can he not?
And it's all going to be about who he has around him and the coaching staff that he builds. And that's what it's going to be for whoever comes in there.
Yeah.
I mean, also, Greg Williams comes in and wins four or five ball games. You think they keep him?
No.
No chance?
I don't, because of one reason. The development of Baker Mayfield. And I don't think, and Greg Williams can't do that. And I'm not sure if he can get an offensive coordinator that can do that.
I mean, there's guys out there, I mean, that you could find. But
you know who has the best odds right now in Vegas of taking that job?
McVay?
Yes.
That's stupid.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's stupid to think that, and it's also stupid for him to go.
Who makes these odds?
But he's from Ohio, and I think that's why he's the best odds. It
doesn't matter, man.
I mean, I'm just
why do you want to move from L.A. where you have the best team in the NFL?
Well, he may not want to.
I mean, that would just be stupid.
I'm just telling you, he has the best odds.
That makes no sense.
Also makes no sense that, I mean, Nick Saban's name's already been tossed around in the rumor mill for this job.
Nick Saban's in the mix for any job. Exactly. He's not leaving.
It don't matter if it's in the NFL or 8-man football down in Kansas.
He's
in the rumor mill for it.
He's not leaving Alabama. I mean, he's proven it when Texas handed him a blank check.
Yeah. He said he was too old to start over.
So if he's too old to start over at Texas, he's dead to start over in Cleveland.
Well, think about it. Miss Terry might say, hey, I want to move to Ohio.
I don't think she's going to say that. Terrible weather.
It is. I mean, it snows 24/7. I can't handle it.
I mean, Miss Terry ain't going to leave Tuscaloosa.
Maybe our guest picker next week can tell us all about the Ohio weather.
Maybe.
Stay tuned for that.
Next week. This Friday.
Yeah, this Friday.
What you talking about, man?
I don't know, man. I've been saying next week all the
time. What you talking about, man? We're together.
You watching NCAA football this weekend? I know you went home. I don't know what you did.
That's all I did. I sat in the chair, watched football all day. Minus about an hour where I went and got something to eat.
Where'd you go eat?
Crazy Case.
Crazy Case. I don't know the good things to eat there, man.
What Mom and Daddy wanted.
I would have went to get to my friends at Huff and Puff. You got a Nacho Mama. Shout out to Tim Williams.
Sponsors. We take sponsorships on the show.
Yeah, Tim, if you want to sponsor on the show, just let us know. We'll get your name out there. So you watched the Texas A&M Mississippi State game. And
watch some of it.
What do you think of it? You think Texas A&M just, they don't know if they want to be a good football team or not?
I mean, Nick Fitzgerald threw the ball.
Over 200 yards.
You should have made your bowl prediction this week, man.
Well, actually, when I made it, I was meaning in the Texas A&M game. That was in my mind for that game.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it was.
Do you think Joe Moorhead has figured out a way to use Nick Fitzgerald properly?
No.
You think it's just a one-time game?
I just think he had a good game.
Okay.
Everybody has
a good game. Because 2 weeks ago, you told me I was stupid and that Nick Fitzgerald will never pass for over 200 yards again. And then he does.
Every dog has his day.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just...
But, no.
You think it was a fluke game?
Man, everybody has those days, man. I just don't think he can consistently do it. I mean, you still saw the bad throws mixed in there. But the good ones that he had happened to be 20-plus yards downfield.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that makes up for a lot when you saw a stat where he was like 6 for 6 on third down for 180 yards. So there's 6 passes for 180 of the 230 that he had.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's chunk plays. Those plays where if you overthrow it, you don't have it. You underthrow it, you don't have it. It has to be that throw. And he was just feeling good, I guess. He was just feeling himself.
Yeah, I think he'll do it at least one more time this year.
No.
Yeah.
When?
Thanksgiving not.
He ain't going to throw it.
I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't.
I'll tell you exactly why he wouldn't.
He's going to run every play and gain a first down.
They could be like Georgia Tech and have 0 passing yards and 400 and something rushing yards and win that game. That's what Georgia Tech did this past week.
That was a good game to watch if you like that offense. I mean, I like football. So.
No pass yards in the entire game and you win it handily. That's pretty good.
I mean,
and I just have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of read option on Thanksgiving night, a lot of quarterback draw, a lot of roll it out, make you think we're going to throw it, but in all actuality, he's just going to run it.
Well, I don't understand why how it's so hard to prepare for that offense. You know what I mean? Like, it's a simple read. Georgia, I don't know if they do it this year. I'm sure they do. They did last year. They do tech time.
The thing is, they play on Thursday night.
Okay.
That just gives you even less time to prepare for it. I mean, you only
for see the it, for the RPOs?
For the triple option.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were talking about Georgia Tech. My fault. But, I mean, for the triple option, especially on a short week, it's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you really had no shot.
It's something that you definitely should do, like Kirby Smart.
And take a day out of the week in fall and spring.
Well, every practice at the end of it for 20 minutes, they do.
And they have to because they play Georgia Tech at the end of the year.
And if you have them on your schedule, I think that's something that every coach should consider incorporating. Yeah, because that's completely different than anything you'll see.
I mean,
because
you see them in bowl games, a lot of times they don't do that well because teams have at least a couple weeks month to prepare for it. And that's why they don't perform as well.
And there's only, like, I think 4 teams that actually run that Tech, Army, Navy. So there's 3 teams that run that offense
off the top of my head.
That I can think of, yeah.
I mean, nobody's just going to practice against it for no reason.
Do you think that offense is a dying breed? Because, I mean, you still see people in those schemes that get opportunities to coach.
I feel like Gus Malzahn was sort of the first guy to really take, I mean, not that style, but that sort of triple option, sort of multiple options with run on each play
and into spread the shotgun. Yeah, and spread it into out. The shotgun. Yeah.
And he was very successful doing that. But you have to have the right quarterback in. I mean, you see when he gets the dynamic running quarterback in, that offense is deadly.
Yeah.
And now they have...
It's like Nick Marshall. He was not that great of a thrower.
No.
He couldn't pass the ball.
He could kill you with his legs.
Yeah. And it made you respect him. The run game will open up any offense for any quarterback. Jake Fromm, for instance.
Yeah.
And you say, well, a good run game equals a good Jake Fromm. Find me a quarterback that's ever played the game of football and ask him if a good run game doesn't help them out.
And what I mean by that, I mean, there's some quarterbacks out there when you're not running the ball, they can take the ball and win you the game.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I feel comfortable with Jake Fromm doing that for me. And that's what I mean when I say that. If they're not running the ball, they're basically out of the game unless he has a fantastic game.
I think he's really only struggled twice in his college career.
Because I think they don't throw the ball enough for the athletes that they have on the perimeter.
No, they don't.
I mean,
and that's not what they want to do either.
They have 4 and 5-star guys out there. And you touch the ball 3 or 4 times a game and you've had a great game at receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see how that's appealing to wide receivers to go there.
If you want to win now, then I guess that would – I mean, that's the only thing. But you see Ole Miss taking receivers from Georgia, from the state of Georgia. And if I'm going to say Elijah Moore was committed to Georgia and flopped Ole Miss, because, I mean, it opens up a lot more for you to put up numbers.
I mean, already this season as a freshman, he's probably got as much production already than he would have had in his first 2 years at Georgia.
Yeah.
He goes to Georgia, he's more than likely getting redshirted. With the talent that they have, with the transfer from Cal coming in, former 5-star recruit.
Yeah.
Plus all the talent you have there already. I mean, they could absolutely kill people on the outside if they wanted to.
Well, the thing is, they incorporate their tight ends as well.
Yeah.
Which is a huge part of that offense. And I think a tight end should be, you know, a good part of any offense. But, dude, there was one drive, Isaac Nada. He had 3 straight catches. Driving down the field, and they ran
basically right there, that drive right before the half.
Yeah,
I mean it was all him.
And they gave like it was almost the same play every time, just a little out route to see if boy would get out of bounds.
The exact same play, and they were just trying to get 5 yards on the first one. It was a busted coverage. And they come right back to it on the next play and get 5 yards.
I think Jake Fromm isn't someone that people need to start calling for his head like they did with LSU. Well, that was a bad game, but if you think about it, it was bad defensively, offensively, coaching-wise. I mean, it was LSU came in and beat them in every category that you can think of.
Yeah, good thing for them, though, they still control their own destiny.
Yeah, and this weekend will be good. This weekend will not be better for anyone other than CBS.
Yeah.
Because you got LSU, Alabama, the night game, and then you have Georgia, Kentucky at that 2:30 slot, if I'm not mistaken. Those are going to be two really good games. I mean, I say really good games. I really think Georgia's going to beat the ever-living.
I don't think the Kentucky game's going to be competitive.
No, but on paper, by records, with the SEC East on the line and what's at stake.
Because they can't score.
They can't. Defensively, they haven't really taken a step back anywhere.
But Florida is probably the best offensive team they've played.
Yeah.
Other than Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, those two teams aren't as powerful on offense as Georgia is. So, I mean, you never know. I mean, Kentucky may have one of those games, but I just don't foresee it happening. I think Georgia's back on track with a big win against Florida. This past weekend, they figured a lot of stuff out, seemed like. And they just looked like they wanted to be there. They didn't look like they wanted to be in the game at LSU. But so, I just don't think Kentucky has much of a chance.
Well, speaking of Kentucky offense, well, I mean, this past Saturday against Missouri,
they scored 6 points.
And they won the ball game.
Yeah.
They couldn't get anything going. Nothing at all. Benny Snell couldn't get anything going. And then Terry Wilson actually gets benched in the game for Gunnar Hoge. And then he couldn't get anything going.
So they put him back in.
And then that last drive, he just kind of let him down the field. And it's just his calm demeanor, I guess. In those types of situations, if you're calm and you know how to have poise, he took the sack he shouldn't have. The clock should have went off in his head. He stood there too long on his heels.
That was in the red zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you go back to Missouri's drive before that.
Yeah.
They elect to throw the ball on 3rd and 2 instead of running.
Yeah.
They run the ball on 3rd and 2. Kentucky doesn't have the timeout, and the ball game's essentially over. But they elect to pass, and it comes back to bite them because Kentucky has that timeout to spare.
Yeah.
That really saves them another play in the game.
And when you're looking back at it, and that 3rd and 2 doesn't pay off.
Oh, I'm watching it live. I said, you got to run the ball here. Whether you get it or not, they're not pushing the ball down the field quickly, and if they have no timeouts, there's really no chance.
But you want to put the ball in your best player's hands. I mean, and your best player is
it's 2 yards, and the running back. I mean, they run the 2 plays before and get 8.
Yeah.
So that's 4 a pop. You gotta play the odds and believe you can get 2 yards. And worst case scenario, you make them use the timeout. And I just think I would have ran the ball personally, just to drain that timeout.
We were texting back and forth, and you said that was not pass interference in the end zone.
I didn't believe it was.
You didn't believe it was? Uh-huh. I could have seen it go in 3 ways. And the only reason I say this is because when you watch a game, you see how things are being called. Uh-huh. And you can say, well, that was a good call, or that was a good no call. Because if you're not going to call this, you can't call that.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch the whole game to know if that was a good call or not. It could have been pass interference either way.
I just feel like, in the last play of the game, with both guys hand fighting the whole time, and the DB was turned around.
Yeah.
I think if he's not turned around, it's an easy pass interference call. But him being turned around and them going back and forth hand fighting, I think you keep the flag in your pocket there.
Do you think it was an uncatchable ball as well? You think that could have played a factor? Because, I mean, it sailed a little bit out of bounds.
I was like 5 yards out of bounds. I mean, if he caught the ball, it was going to be an incredible catch. And even if he catches it, I don't think he gets a foot down.
So, he called it.
I mean,
he didn't get any foot down in bounds.
So I mean, and once he catches it, you're allowed to push him out.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no rule saying. Well, I mean, he did catch it out of bounds. So I mean, I just believe that's a situation where you keep the flag in your pocket.
You think it might have been a setup for the conspiracy?
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Be a little set up.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Kind of like Devin White not playing against Bama.
Because I mean, if Kentucky loses that game,
there's no hype around this Georgia-Kentucky game at all.
None. I mean, sort of like when Alabama's in a close game, usually late, there's always a little iffy call that probably shouldn't be made or that wouldn't be made the rest of the game but that situation that turns out going in their favor.
Yeah.
And it's just – the reason they do it for Alabama is because Alabama makes all the money for the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. You can say whatever you want to. The NCAA is a business for them.
Yeah, it's easy.
And
it's obvious.
Telecast companies is a business for them.
And in certain situations, it's obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's iffy, but majority of the time, it's obvious.
So, I know you call it the tail end of Texas-Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
And here's a big question from that game for me. The biggest question mark. Who wins in a fight, Gundy or Tom Herman?
Gundy.
Hands down?
He's got the power of the mullet, man.
And he's crazy, man.
I mean,
he runs on the field to try to get his team to step back, not cause a scene at the end.
I think he threw a little jab at one of the Texas players, too, while he's out there. Very subtle. After watching it back, I think he did say something.
Well, Tom Herman did not like that he ran on the field.
Tom Herman was not happy about it. But
it was a big play out to see how they were going to shake hands, whatever, and then they kind of brush it off.
Yeah, they knew the camera was going to be on him.
Yeah.
That's just the thing. You already know the camera's on you, so you're not going to act a fool.
What happens if somebody actually gets into it? I mean, that's the second time this season we've seen something like this.
Great TV.
With Derek Mason and Dan Mullen, and then with Mike Gundy and Tom Herman.
Just good TV.
What would actually happen if one of the coaches got into a fight on the field, all out brawl?
I just believe both would be ejected.
Think they'd be fired, depending on who they are?
No. I don't think that's enough to fire anybody. I mean, sometimes you get in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
In the spirit of competition, especially in a close game, you shouldn't fire anybody for that.
Especially if you're Texas, because, I mean, that put a damper. You at least controlled your own destiny for the most part.
I mean, all Texas had to do is win out, and they're sitting right there on the cusp of the playoffs.
And if they're not in the playoffs, they're in the New Year's Six bowl game.
Yeah.
That's a dagger and everything.
I mean, they can still win out and have a shot.
A shot for the playoff?
No, for the Big 12 championship.
They
win out, they're still in.
They could definitely win out and ruin Oklahoma's chances, which I think that if for Texas fans, if you can't win it, just keep Oklahoma from winning and you're...
It's a win for them.
Yeah.
I just don't think... I think there's at least one more loss for Texas. Especially now, after they know they're not getting in the playoff anymore. And I just think there's at least one more loss out there for them, which is going to more than likely push them out of the Big 12 championship, and they'll play a mediocre bowl.
Yeah.
But we'll watch. But that's pretty much how I see the rest of their season going. I could be wrong, but I just think this just takes all of the hype and all back around off of Texas. Because it is a game that they should not have lost. Oklahoma State has looked awful the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's one reason why I didn't want to pick them, because they haven't looked good.
No.
At all.
They haven't looked good in some wins.
And it's just, I keep saying this, when you lose a guy like Mason Rudolph, who's been there for 3-4 years in the system,
a little bit.
And as good as he was, I mean, you need a big, tall gunslinger that's kind of mobile, that can run that offense, and that's what, and Mason Rudolph fit it perfectly.
No doubt.
So it takes time to get that going again.
It's not just going to happen overnight.
So right now, who's the best one-loss team to you? Because, I mean, there's a lot. You think about it.
In my rankings or in my opinion?
Just in your opinion. Overall, who do you think? Because if we're not, we're going to have a one-loss team at least in the college football playoff.
Yeah.
Sitting right now, who do you think has the one-loss team has the best chance of getting in that final spot?
I think it's Oklahoma. Just when you look at, I don't think anybody wants to play that offense. Because nobody should be scared of their defense to go into a game against their defense. But I just believe their offense is so powerful, they're going to hang 30 on anybody.
Yeah.
They may hang 40 on anybody. And they scored, they just hit you in the mouth so quick, if you just struggle out of the gate and their offense comes out clicking, you can be down. It's like playing Alabama this year. You can be down 14-0 in 5 minutes.
Yeah. If they come out and hit you in the mouth, definitely.
And the defense has looked a little better the past couple weeks. I mean, I think the scheme's just a little better with the new coordinator. But that's just – that offense, that's not a team I want to see as a defense opposed from you. Because going into the game, realistically, when you're preparing to play Oklahoma – you're prepared to say, we need to score 40 points to win this ball game.
It's going to be a shootout for sure.
I mean, you have to be prepared to score 30 to 40 points to win the ball game. And not everybody has the offense firepower to do that, even against the mediocre defense that they have. And I just don't think anybody wants to play them late just because of their offense.
Yeah, I mean, in the AP polls that came out yesterday, 9 spots, 4 through 12, all one-loss teams. Every team controls their own destiny.
You say every team in that would?
Except for Kentucky. Well, no, Kentucky does if they win out.
Yeah, if Kentucky wins out.
I think every team can control their own destiny.
Yeah.
Because you got LSU, they win out, they go. You got Georgia, they win out, they go. Michigan. They went out, I think they go. Or not saying they go, but saying that they potentially have the chance to.
They definitely have the chance. I don't see UCF having a chance.
No, they're the only team in there. That's my mistake. They're the only team in there that doesn't have a loss on their record. I don't think they have a chance at all to get into the playoff. Right now, I think my bet to get into the playoff would either be Ohio State or Michigan, someone from the Big Ten. And the only reason I say that is because those two teams have to play at the end of the year. And then
you're going to lose one of them.
Yeah, one of them's going to lose. And if you win, that's a huge win in November.
And you're losing two teams this week, potentially. LSU loses this weekend against Bama. They're out.
Yeah.
Kentucky or Georgia, the loser of that game, is out.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you have Oklahoma potentially matching up with a two-loss Texas team. And then you still have the West Virginia-Oklahoma game coming up this season.
And loser, if Oklahoma wins that game, that's a huge win for them, or vice versa.
The loser of that game is more than likely out.
Yeah.
So just right there, you're losing one, two, three, four. Losing four of those teams, you're knocking that, what was it, eight?
Yeah.
You're knocking that eight down to four. Just right off the bat.
Yeah.
Barring an upset from anybody. And I think a one loss to Notre Dame would also put them out.
Michigan.
Huh?
You're talking about Michigan?
No, Notre Dame. I think
If Notre Dame loses another game down the... Yeah.
I think if Notre Dame loses one game, they're out.
Yeah, no doubt.
With no conference championship.
Yeah.
And...
I think they definitely have to win out to be in it.
Yeah, they have to be undefeated. And that game at the end of the year at USC is going to be tough. And they also have Syracuse the week before USC. So that one could always be tough. Also be tough. And they also travel to Northwestern this weekend. I mean, they don't have there's games they should win. They should win all of those ball games.
But it's none guaranteed.
But they're not easy ball games.
Northwestern's proved that.
I mean, they play Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse, and USC to close out their season.
I think in this, the dream scenario for Washington State to get there, because they have a loss to USC. That's their one loss. It's for USC to beat Notre Dame and Washington State went out.
Yeah.
Because when USC beats Notre Dame, that looks like, okay, well, that's a decent loss. Yeah. You know?
I just think what hurts the Pac-12 so much, Washington State's only ranked team in the conference after Washington's loss.
Yeah, I mean, that Washington loss did.
I mean, they're going to be the only ranked team
in the conference. And Oregon got beat by.
And then you have Utah. Them and Utah. And Utah already has two losses.
Utah's kind of your surprise team this year, aren't they?
I mean, Utah's always tough. They're always really tough at home. But you just never know what you're going to get out of them.
Yeah. I think it's going to be – I mean, college rankings come out tonight. The first one for the committee.
I mean – you have a three-loss Washington, three-loss Stanford, three-loss Oregon, three-loss Cal, and six-loss Oregon State, all in Washington State's division.
Yeah.
I mean, and on the other side, you have Utah's the best team with two losses.
As Utah and USC, they played already.
Yeah, Utah beat USC.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Pac-12's looking at being the odd conference out once again.
Yeah.
Just because of lack of overall competition or top-end power.
Jake Browning actually got benched in the Washington game. I don't know if you – did you see that?
I did not.
He got benched, got brought back in.
I mean, I just think – because, I mean, you look at the SEC, top to bottom, it's not great. But you have the teams that are competitive, the LSUs, Georgia, Florida, which has been good this year.
Kentucky, which has found a way to win this year. I wouldn't say
Kentucky's look good at all.
But they found a way to win ball games. They
found ways to win games.
And then in the bottom half of it, you got A&M and Mississippi State who really aren't pushovers. No, but they're really not pushovers.
Yeah. I mean, they could beat anybody. And, I mean, you look at it. In the East, you have one loss, two loss, three loss, all on one side. And in the West, you have no loss, one loss, three loss. So, I mean... you just never know.
I think the thing with Mississippi State is definitely offensively because their defense has showed up in every game.
Their defense is a top 10, top 5 defense in the country. They just can't score. They just cannot score. The offense has just not been there for them this year like they thought it would be. And you just can't win without putting up points.
No.
Because, I mean, their defense holding people on 20.
And you have to think about the loss with LSU strictly on the offense. Yeah. Because they turned the ball over too much.
And their defense, they were still in the ball game.
Yeah. And the defense, you know, is holding this team to field goals. Well, if they get the ball on the 30-yard line and you hold them to a field goal, that's a win for you.
I mean, also going back to strength of conference – do you think a loss for Clemson hurts them?
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
Maybe knocks them out.
I think it'll knock them out.
Because ACC hadn't been good, but you have seen Boston College hadn't been playing bad. Syracuse hadn't played bad. And then Virginia, not terrible. But all those teams have two losses.
Yeah.
Not terrible teams, but Clemson just doesn't have that signature win on their schedule where they could rebound from a loss this late in the season.
Yeah, because even the ACC title game, it's not going to be against...
It's more than likely going to be against Virginia.
And yeah, that's not a ranked team.
Looking at it, it's more likely Virginia. And you just... There's nothing on here to recover from a loss to anybody.
The thing to me is, so if you say the eyeball out is the Pac-12, why you say they don't get in? Clemson loses. I really don't think that they should get in. Then you kind of go down to, I think something you might have to look at LSU Georgia. Barring Alabama wins out, and barring that Georgia goes to SEC championship, then you're going to look at a two-loss team, two of them, that I think could compete with any team in the country.
What happens? Alabama goes in undefeated and gets beat by Georgia.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep Alabama out?
No, they wouldn't.
Okay, so then you have Alabama, Georgia. If Notre Dame's undefeated, they're automatically in.
Yeah.
And if Clemson's undefeated, they're in. So you have two of the major conferences with a team in.
I think that'd be the best scenario for the committee. Because it'd be the easiest argument for them. Yeah. Okay, well, Alabama's been the best team all year, so they deserve to be in.
But you look at Alabama's schedule, they don't have a signature win other than would be LSU.
Yeah.
In that scenario.
I mean they beat Texas A&M, which is a decent defense, but it's not holding up to
against
that
offense. At home.
So it's really just because they play the Louisville. I get it.
The best thing for the nationwide of the committee with all of your conferences would be Alabama winning out.
Yeah.
Because if Alabama wins out, you have everybody else with two losses. And that makes it easy to only have one team from the SEC when you have them with two losses.
I think this Alabama offense going up against the Mississippi State and LSU defenses, the back-to-back weeks, will be something to look at for them.
Something interesting I'd like to see, if Notre Dame and Clemson both lose, that would just be chaos.
It'd be like the first year all over again with Baylor TCU. It's like, well, who the hell do we put in here?
But they have a conference championship game this year now.
Yeah.
They put that in.
But you get what I'm saying. Like, you're going to be in a situation.
You're not going to know who to put in.
Do or die either way. So real quick, give me your top six right now.
Bama.
Obviously, no question about it.
Notre Dame. You got your three undefeated.
And then 4, 5, and 6 really could be just about anybody. Any teams that you say, I don't think I'll argue with you just because.
I'm going to throw Oklahoma in. Just because of the way they've been playing.
At the 4 spot?
Yeah.
Okay.
LSU at 5 and Michigan at 6.
Okay. See, I have Bama and Notre Dame just because I feel like Notre Dame has a signature win over Michigan and Clemson doesn't have a signature win.
I'm thinking Clemson at 2 just because of the way they've looked.
Yeah, I mean, they have been actually blowing people out
they
now.
They hadn't been playing anybody.
Yeah.
But they've been doing what you have to do against those teams, and that's not make it close.
Yeah.
So I keep them at 2 just because of the power of their defense. They got 4 first-round draft picks on their defensive front.
No doubt. But I have Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and then I have LSU, Michigan, and Georgia. And then you can say, well, you're being biased towards the SEC, having 3 teams in there. I don't care. I think those are three of the best teams in the country. Yeah. I finally put in a little bit of faith in LSU. I don't think they're going to win this weekend, and that'll drop them down, but I still think that they can compete with the best in the country.
But they're out. They're out with a loss this week. They're in with a win.
You put them against Clemson or Notre Dame.
I think they win.
They'll beat them. I think they'll beat them 9 times out of 10.
I don't know. I don't know about Clemson. Because I think Clemson's defense can stack up and stop the run.
Yeah.
And make Joe Burrow beat them. And then Clemson's offense isn't bad. It'll be a good game.
Yeah. And so, any Heisman hopefuls come out for you this weekend, or is just Tua?
Just Tua and Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
It's a 2-horse race right now, in my opinion. Just the numbers that both of those guys have put up.
Some articles actually have Kyler Murray with more Heisman points than Tua.
Just because Tua's not playing full game.
Yeah.
And I can see both arguments.
Yeah.
but I still have Tua and Kyler coming up. I want to see. Tua can really seal it this week, I think. With a big game in Death Valley, I think he can wrap it up.
Yeah.
He can wrap it up there. But you also have Kyler Murray with the games, potential big games that they have coming up against West Virginia and whoever they play in the Big 12 championship.
I think the only thing is, and that you'll hear a lot of argument, is there's no defense in the Big 12. And I mean, there's not. There,
but you look at who's Tua, what defense has Tua played this year? I mean, this week will really be the only formidable defense he's played.
Yeah, this year, this week.
And then State.
Next week. I mean, I think the A&M defense is better than anything that Oklahoma's seen, Texas. In my opinion. I think A&M's defense is better than Texas.
I think it's about even. A&M's going to have a slight edge. But Texas defense isn't terrible.
Mm-mm.
But A&M's going to have
the best defense in the Big 12.
Yeah.
I don't think that's an argument. But I'm just saying, like, I think that'll be the argument for other people, is that, well, he really hasn't played any defense. Yeah. But he does put up numbers.
I mean, you can look at it both ways.
Yeah. I mean, that's most of the time.
You're going to have guys on both ends of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have people who view it that way and people who view it the other way.
Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
The NBA is unfair again because you have the Warriors with two guys with 50 points within a week.
Yeah.
And neither of them played 30 minutes to get that. Klay Thompson breaking the NBA record for threes in a game with 14 last night.
Broke Steph Curry's record.
Getting 56 points in 27 minutes.
It's crazy. When that dude is on, he's the most deadly shooter.
Go ahead and lock it. Warriors win another title. It's over.
Something wild.
They're the best team in the NBA. You can't sit here. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, but you're saying lock it. I mean, it's a long season. You don't know. They could both tear their ACLs or something. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. I'm just saying.
Lock it. Barring injury, the Warriors are the best team, hands down, in the NBA. I mean,
there's no argument with that.
I don't care who you're a fan of. If you can't just look at it and see that, you're lying to yourself.
I mean, my Pelicans suffered their first loss tonight.
You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't realize that they're the best team in the NBA.
Pelicans can beat them.
The yeah, maybe they beat them one night, but can they beat them four times within a week and a half, 2 weeks?
Well, you think about
it. I don't think they can. I don't think anybody can.
The Nets beat the three-headed monster all four games in the regular season and then got swept.
I mean, the playoffs is just a different animal. And the Pelicans, while I think they're going to be improved this year, they just don't have a lot of postseason experience. I mean, barring injury, the Warriors will have another title. Big whoop. Sorry to spoil your NBA season.
I don't think that spoils anybody. I think everybody's pretty relaxed on that.
I mean, you have those guys out there who are like, oh, yeah, this team's going to have a real shot. No, there's going to be no shot.
So you're saying you don't think Boston has a chance if Boston stays healthy? You've made that argument almost every podcast that Boston could have a chance to beat them.
Yeah, but then I've seen the Warriors play, and I've been reminded just how good they are. And I'll give Boston two games at best. I'll give them two games.
All right, well, we're going to have to go back to this podcast so I can rub in your face when they lose, if they lose.
When they lose, heard it here first.
That's all we have for this podcast. Have a good week. Join us Friday. We have a special guest picker coming on the show. You don't want to miss that. And keep listening. We thank y'all so much for it.